Radio.
Instilling Virtues in Children. An interview with Andrew Mullins in the lead up to the World Congress of Families in Sydney. Okay, well, thank you very much for joining me, Andrew.
It's a pleasure.
So the first things first that I want to go through here, what exactly is meant by teaching children virtues? Can you go into describing what exactly that is and how that's differentiated from other teaching roles of parents?
Yeah, sure. I suppose if we look back at history, you realise that there's a lot of wisdom about moral education, about how we can raise children so that they can act well, that sort of idea. And really, virtues date back to Socrates and Aristotle. Aristotle wrote a book called The Nicomachean Ethics, which really has been the manual for moral education for the subsequent 2,000 years. And it's really only since the Enlightenment that people started to question that. In the last 50 years, the word virtue, you'd probably feel, has lost a little bit of the gloss. It's become something which is a bit staid and boring. And all the more reason in the end that we have to return to the idea of inculcating in young people good habits that enable them to think clearly. Because virtues are all about autonomy. They're all about helping people run their own lives effectively and not be diverted by impulse or emotion or by external factors like peer group or consumer society or whatever. This is really important, actually, because people are not clear anymore about what our goals are in moral education. You know, there's a big selling book out there for young people called The Secret of Happy Children, as if somehow we've achieved our goals if we raise children who are happy as children. Aristotle actually said the opposite. He said that we actually need to raise young people so that they have a real hardiness about them. The idea is that we need to train them when they're very small so that they have a courage and fortitude about their character, that they have a self-control, that they don't need to always be dipping into something that's fun and pleasurable. And this will set them in good stead. He talked about happiness as the reward of virtue, that if we grow up with strengths of character in our lives, then afterwards we can run our own course very well and we will be able to be self-directing. We will have habits of mind which enable us to think clearly. We'll have habits where we put other people first in our lives, and we'll have habits of self-control and resilience.
So now you're, of course, the headmaster of a college, so you probably have a little bit of background to be able to answer this, but what is the appropriate balance between parents and the school for instilling virtues in children?
Okay. I'm currently headmaster of a school called Wollamai College in the west of Sydney, which is the newest of the Parents for Education schools. And for 15 years, I was a headmaster of Redfield College up in Dural. And I think this is significant because the Parents for Education schools, and there's four of them in Sydney, those two schools plus Tangara School for Girls and also Montgrove College out west in the west of Sydney, those schools have been set up with the whole ethos of being a support for parents. So we see our service to parents, our expertise in terms of academics, as a service to parents, but also we're coming very much from the direction that it helps enormously for parents to have the other organisations and people involved in the life of their child completely in sync. So what we're trying to do is to stay in step with sound values that parents are trying to pass on to their children, that sort of idea.
Okay, so probably you see from time to time there may be a little bit of tension for some parents or for even some teachers where one side may be failing in instilling virtues or, I guess, instilling those good values in children. Are you able to give your thoughts on that? What do you think would be a solution there?
Inevitably, when you've got a relationship problem, you have to have more communication. In my school, we have, instead of having parent-teacher nights, we have interviews four times a year, face-to-face with the teacher who is the mentor of the young person. And And that builds up a tremendous rapport between school and home. As a school, as a staff, we talk often about our duty is to be a support for parents and to be very proactive in communication and to keep our eyes open for not just for academic issues, but also for patterns of either positive patterns or negative patterns, because in the end, in the character of a young person, the concrete is setting. So if we see something developing which we're not happy with, we need to act. We can't just say that's not my brief. If a teacher in the context of seeing that child in a group of students in a classroom realises that this young person is developing habits of arrogance or treating other people badly or unkindness or shyness or whatever, right? The teacher has a duty to act, because possibly the parent is not seeing that child in a context with other students very much, other young people even. There's a problem in our society that children more and more these days have another world that they're involved in, and the parents are not part of that world very often, whether it's Facebook or whether it's down at the local shopping centre or wherever, even sporting teams. So school has a real role to play there in terms of supporting parents and also with trained staff who can keep their eyes open for the young person and flag things and also guide the young person in the development of strengths of character that they will need down the track.
Hmm. So now switching back to parents a little bit here, do you have any advice on how parents can teach their children virtue?
Oh, yeah. I put a book out a few years ago, and probably that's the reason I got the invite to the World Congress. It's called Parenting for Character. It's put out by Finch. That is really a manual of fostering virtue in young people. And what are the principles? I suppose the first principle is that children are meant to be very impressionable. That's the way they're designed. So therefore, it's really important that the right impressions are received by a young person. I'm talking about our example. I'm talking about what we expose people to on the television, on the internet. I'm talking about the peer group influences. I'm talking about the influence of the million ads that we'll watch in our lifetime on television, this sort of thing, right? And so the first principle, I think, is we have to understand that it's, you know, this task of raising children is a wonderful privilege. Their children are designed to be impressionable, so it's up to the parents to do their very best to manage the inputs coming into the life of that young person, because those inputs will be adopted. Every experience goes into the brain of a young person. We know that very well now. And it leaves an impression either for better or for worse. And a habit is simply, a virtue is a good habit, right? And a habit is simply a repeated action that becomes second nature. So the more we do something, the more we experience something, the more it lays down pathways in our mind that predict our future behaviours. So past behaviour predicts future behaviour. It's the best predictor. So we need to raise children in a regime where their habitual behaviours are positive and good, so that they're able to duplicate those on their own when they're older. So the second principle I'm talking about there is guided practice, that parents guide their children into different behaviours, whether it's, when visitors arrive at home, that we all greet the visitor cheerfully and positively and openly. We spend time with him. We don't look at the television when the person walks into our room. That we pay people the courtesy at the dinner table of, you know, not playing with our phones or Angry Birds or whatever it is. We make sure, for example, that we put work before play. It's a very simple little rule for kids, or we clean up after ourselves. So the first principle is really watch the impressions that we expose children to. First of all, our own example. And, you know, we've seen these ads now on television about children absorb our drinking. So that's one example of that. Second principle would be guided practice, that we help children walk the walk, because that's the way we learn. We learn experientially primarily. And so it's quite important that we do things in the right way so that afterwards they become second nature. What else? Affection from mum and dad is crucial. We know very clearly that from neuroscience, we know now that learning that is accompanied with positive affect is much more likely to take. and that punishment is less effective than encouragement. We know that. What are the principles? I think it's worth drilling down to the different virtues. There are four cardinal virtues from, you know, the really even Seligman, who comes at this from another direction, comes to the same conclusion. He wrote a magnificent book in the early 2000s called Character, Strengths and Virtues, which is, again, a manual of inculcating virtue in people. And his avowed intention is to put virtues back into the clinical domain because he sees that it's much more effective psychologically to help a person develop strengths of character rather than try to eradicate complexes that have developed in their character because they haven't had those strengths to start with. So he's very much an advocate now for what, you know, is what has become known as positive psychology, which is to build up strengths of character in young people. And he comes from a wonderful background of, you know, very close experimental work with young people experiencing depression. So he's got the runs on the board. And I think we're a very happy time, really. We've got the classical wisdom. We've got Seligman with his clinical practice saying, yep, we've got to do virtues as well. We've got neuroscience saying, yep, we now know that children are very impressionable and we know the mechanism by which children absorb behaviours from their environment. We know how habits are formed now in the brain. So you put all these things together and it's building a huge case that we shouldn't put virtue out in the doghouse. We've really got to put it up there on a pedestal and say, yep, this is a priority if I'm raising kids, and it should be a priority for every school. What other priorities should we have in terms of how we pass on virtues? There are sensitive periods of development. We know about this in the brain now. So, for example, it's very hard to teach a teenager order, but a young child is much more able to be, is much more receptive to ideas of order because of routines, because of ways we do things at home, because of habits that we get into when we're very tiny. So, you know, there's a window, sensitive period for the development of order, if you like, which is probably very early childhood. Honesty. I mean, children, once they're 7 or 8, they shouldn't be telling lies. If a child's still telling lies when they're 8, there should be some pretty urgent sort of soul searching from mum and dad to think, well, hey, we've got to keep our focus on this, because if a child grows into adolescence telling lies, that's really a disaster zone. And they will live a double life and they will end up getting themselves into lots of trouble. What else do children need? Lots of advice. I'm a bit of a fan of some of the classical writings, and you go to a book like the Odyssey, and Homer in the Odyssey uses the phrase a few times. He's got Telemachus looking for his father, he's wanting to go out and look for his father, Odysseus, who's still lost at sea somewhere. And he says to his mum, "Mother, I'm no longer a child. I know the difference between right and wrong." And to the Greek mind, that was what was the definition of a person having grown up, that they now carried within them the guidebook. They knew the difference between right and wrong. Now, what are we fighting against in our society? We're fighting against a relativization of values, if you like, that, you know, I've got my values, but you could say, well, you know, they're yours, I don't agree with them. And so it's, parents also have to have the conviction that if I'm teaching children what's right and wrong, I'm going to follow my instincts here and my conscience. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to get swayed by what somebody else thinks. And sure, we've got the church to guide us, etc., if we're Catholic, or if we've got a religion behind us that can help us. But ultimately, moral principles are rational principles. So that should help us to stay on track and to know what we pass on to our kids. I'd say focus on two virtues very much, sincerity and generosity. Sincerity is very much the virtue of the mind, isn't it, to be able to recognise the truth. And generosity is very much the virtue that is at the foundation of love. And, you know, from classical times and right through the greatest philosophers of the 20th century, we've got a consensus that man is fulfilled by truth and by love, by knowing the truth and by loving. And in fact, they're obviously connected. You know, how do we know what to love unless we can recognize something that's true and good for us? So we need the virtues that will underpin knowing the truth and loving, and the two virtues that underpin knowing the truth and loving are sincerity and generosity. If you like, they're the virtues of our higher powers as a human being, our intellect, our will. Again, so they're priorities for parents, and it's really important to put those in place. There's another thing I suppose I need to talk about if I've got a couple more minutes, that the whole purpose of virtue education is not to raise kids so that they're little robots doing what mum and dad want. The whole purpose of virtue education is to raise young people so that they can follow their own reason. So it's very important for parents, even in preteen years, to be consulting their kids, asking their opinion, challenging them to think, making sure that they give them the opportunity to make up their own mind if it's not a case of physical or moral danger. And afterwards, if it hasn't been a very good decision, if they've been a bit selfish or something, afterwards debrief and say, listen, you know, Granny really missed you when you stayed at home to watch telly, don't you think it would have been nicer to go over? And do it in a context where there's not a big emotional reaction. But if we give kids practice, if we give them space to use their freedom, but in a guided way, afterwards when they're young adults, the chances are they're not going to come too far off the track, you know. And all of this applies to, you know, raising a child in their faith as well. It's no good as just raising compliant children who do what we want them to do while they're at home, and then when they walk out the door, they're completely changed, you know. That would be a disaster. That would be a failure of parenting. All we have to do is to foresee we've got a period of time here that's been given to us to raise this young person to be a wonderful young man and woman. What do we have to do to prepare them for the future, to think for themselves? And classically, that's what virtues are. Virtues enable us to act rationally by helping us to manage our emotional life.
Mm. You mentioned before that you'll be talking at the World Congress of Families coming up next month.
That's right.
Can you give us a little bit of a spiel about what exactly you'll be talking about there?
Okay, I'm very much on this theme of virtue education, and I've just completed a thesis actually for a doctorate on, I'm still waiting for word back from the markers, but it's on this issue of how are virtues built up in the brain. So what's the link between Aristotle and neuroscience? What's the link between virtues and how we build up emotional regulation, goal-directed behaviours in the mind, in the brain. So that's what I'll be talking about. And it'll be very much a potted summary, but I intend to try to draw the links pretty clearly between the two of them.
Okay, well, yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to, hopefully I'll be able to attend that talk. I mean, I'm not a parent myself, of course, but, it is good knowledge to have, whether we have friends who are parents or if and when we become parents ourselves. It's great knowledge to have and incredibly important within our current context to raise children with those strong values and virtues.
Good on you, Luke.
So, thank you very much, Andrew, for joining me today.
Thanks very much.
That was Andrew Mullins with Instilling Virtues in Children. For more interviews, talks and shows, visit cradio.org.au.